I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Byron Matthews here as well. Did we find it?
We found the audio that a lot of our listeners reminded me of. You asked me if I could remember any instances of me going off on writers or reporters or anything. And I forgot the most, like, the most famous to our listeners of them all, which was after a really bad loss to the Bengals back in like 2003 or 2004 or something. I was given the player of the game. That was me jamming on my guitar after I was angry about the loss. So this is what happened. We had a really bad loss. You know, Dom Capers had just, you know, torn into us after the game and everything. I was feeling really bad about everything, but Granato, or the broadcast team, named me the player of the game. And he came up and he interviewed me. Went the way it normally would in those situations. And we're standing in the middle of the locker room. And at the end, Granato says, "Hey, I know it was a rough day, but he gives me a gift card." And this is how it all went down.
I know you guys can't see me, but f*** that. Oh, jeez.
So he had, he said, as he gave me the gift card, he said, "Hey, I know it's a rough day, but your eyes really lit up when you saw that gift card." And in my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, I sound like the classic professional athlete that just doesn't even care about the fact that we just lost as long as I got my gift card or I got my money. So yeah, again, Byron played again. This is how I sounded.
I know you guys can't see me, but f*** that. Oh, jeez.
You can see right there that I had a future as a broadcaster because in my mind I was thinking about the audience. Okay, how is the audience perceiving this? What are they hearing? What filter are they seeing it through? And that one, I told you the other two incidents where Bo Corona and then that other reporter that I can't remember who it was that I kind of went up to immediately afterwards and apologized to. I threw the gift card on the ground. I went over to my locker and then I just sat and glared at Granato.
Did you ever apologize?
I did apologize later on. I think I had Granato's phone number, so I called him up later. We weren't texting back in those days. I called him up and apologized. But so Granato, you know, he's finishing his media duties. He's standing at a scrum interviewing probably David Carr or somebody in the locker room after that. And I'm like over on the other side of the locker room just staring at him. And Granato's like looks back at me with this look on his eyes like, what the hell happened, man? Because I knew Granato a little bit by that point. So sometimes, like, as my wife was driving me home, I called him up and apologized. But it was ultimately, I think Granato was pretty happy about it because it created good content. He wasn't happy that it happened on a live mic. So, you know, the station, I dropped an F-bomb on a live broadcast. But other than that, yeah, that was, and so in all three of those instances, those were reporters who were actually trying to be nice to me that I flipped out on. So I had some psychological issues, man. I did.
What happened to the gift card?
That's what I really regret now. You know, now that I'm living on more of a budget, I'm like, I don't know. I guess maybe Granato used it. I don't know. That's a good question.
You basically just burned $100 or however. I don't know how much the gift card was for, but it's probably not cheap.
Yeah, no, I think it was like a $500 gift card.
So you just burned $500.
Right. But my dignity was more important than that. Okay, Adam? It's more my dignity we're talking about. Other people pointing out Josh Innes and I on Radio Row. That was different because I wasn't, I wasn't an athlete at the time. And I was, listen, the lead up to all of that was that it went back over a year. Josh, the year before on Radio Row, had been like harassing the afternoon show while they were on air. And our program director at the time didn't do anything about it. So when like Jim Mudd came up to our broadcast and I could tell he was recording it on his phone and sending out, like I knew exactly what they were doing. And I knew, and our program director was just meekly, he's no longer our program director. He was just meekly sitting by and letting it happen. I'm like, oh, this is all going to happen again, huh? So that's where I like kind of took matters into my own hand. I'm like, all right, well, no, I'm not just going to sit here. And maybe I was a little bit hungover, but that was a whole different situation altogether.
Some people just can't handle Minneapolis and the Mall of America.
That was everybody. You got to understand, we were like caged rats, and they've done all these studies where they show that when you take rats and you start to confine them into more rats per square meter than there should be, stuff starts to get nasty. And we're up there in the Mall of America. Everybody was crammed into the food court. Well, you had all these fat Minnesotans walking around gawking at us the whole time. And everybody was on edge, okay? Everybody was on edge. It was a powder keg just waiting to explode.
And explode it did. Texans open the preseason tonight against the Bears in Canton. It's the Hall of Fame game, first of four preseason games for the Texans. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. What time is pregame? 4?
4 o'clock. It'll be Sean and I. They're giving Sean a little bit of a break this morning because he's doing the pregame, the postgame, and then our show again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
That's quite a bit. Who is going to play? The biggest question when you get into these preseason games is who is going to actually play? D'Amico. Can you give us some information? Who's going to play tonight?
You guys all see who play on Thursday. I'm not going through a list of who's playing, who's not playing. I'm not going through that list. You guys will see on Thursday who steps out there.
Well, that's not helpful.
All right, D'Amico. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm curious. Man, quit being such a monster all the time. D'Amico. He's got a little bit of Seth in him, I think. He wasn't. Nobody was being mean to him or anything, and he decided to get firm.
Should have offered him a gift card. Maybe he would have decided.
Hey, if I give you a $500 gift card adjusted for inflation, $750 gift card, can you tell us who the starters are? And that's when he would have flipped out.
Now
he said, "Don't mistake my kindness for weakness. Damn it."
Now, Aaron Wilson did report yesterday that among the guys who are going to play, Davis Mills, John Metchie, and Damian Pierce, I think all three are, these are big seasons for all three. Davis Mills in year four, John Metchie in year two, but really year three, coming off of missing his rookie season. And then obviously Damian Pierce in year three coming off of a bad day too. Now here is Davis Mills on how much he will play today.
We haven't been told any of our playing time. I'll be ready if my number's called. Been putting in a lot of really good work with our players throughout training camp so far and OTAs. And when I get my chance to go out there and perform, I'm ready and showcase all the guys around me. It's going to be fun.
This is perhaps something that Davis Mills is accustomed to, and I believe him when he says they haven't been told who's going to play, because that's exactly what it sounds like they did in the regular season last year. One of the reasons the Texans were able to keep it a secret that Davis Mills wasn't going to start that Tennessee game, I think, is because the players themselves didn't know until pretty close to the game. So I think that Mills has been the backup quarterback through camp, but I don't think it's set in stone. I think this is he's got to go out and prove it. I think there's two things that the Texans would be concerned about with Davis Mills. One, is he ready to genuinely be the backup quarterback after having a year in the system? And two, if he does do well in the preseason, is there a chance that at some point somebody might float an offer for Davis Mills if their starting quarterback goes down? So there's a little bit of a glow up potentially for Davis Mills.
Well, that's why it feels like for me, listen, guys have a lot on the line in the preseason. You have guys who are trying to make the roster. You have guys just trying to hold on to a roster spot. But for Davis Mills, it feels like he's got a ton to lose here and a ton to gain also, just because he's trying to find his way in this league as either a backup quarterback or maybe somebody sees enough in him to be a starter. And you look at how the first 3 years of his career have gone. Like, to me, I don't know if he's locked down like a roster spot. Like, to me, if he doesn't play well this preseason, or if he doesn't show something this preseason, then I feel like the Texans will almost have to go out and look for another quarterback.
Yeah, if they're not comfortable with Case Keenum. I think Case showed last year what I think he would be good for is like, okay, in an emergency situation or on a 1 week basis or what have you, he can come in and they can mix things up a little bit, and you know, might get you a win or two. But if it had to be for a long stretch, I don't think that's who they would want over the course of time. So, yeah, I guess almost, yeah, if Davis Mills plays well enough that other teams would want to trade for him, he might also be too valuable for the Texans to let him go. I think that he is set up that going against backups, because the Bears don't look like they're going to play many of their starters at all, he's in his second season in this system. But also look at the guys that he might be throwing to. John Metchie, second year in this system. Noah Brown, who played very well, you know, in spells last year in this system. I mean, Robert Woods, his age would tell you he's not going to play a whole bunch in this preseason game, and yet you never know for sure. They might just go out and have Robert Woods soak up some of these snaps. I think Davis Mills is set up to get a pretty fair shake at putting in a good performance. This isn't the same as just him being out there with a bunch of rookie wide receivers who don't know, who are running the wrong routes or the timing is off. We've seen some really nice throws from Davis Mills to John Metchie, to Cade Stover, like to some of the backups so far, that if he's genuinely worthy of being your quarterback, your backup quarterback, then I don't think I can allow for a bad preseason performance. I can't just chalk it up as just a preseason. It's just stuff that happens in the preseason.
And obviously for Mills, he has an opportunity to solidify his spot with this team now, but he's also auditioning for every other team in the league because this is a guy who's a free agent at the end of the season, and so he could cash in as a free agent, you know, this offseason and maybe try and lock down. Maybe there's a team out there that needs a quarterback, and you know, they see something in him. Like, Brock Osweiler got a lot of money for not accomplishing a whole lot in this league. And if you're Davis Mills and you have kind of the track record that he did just when he got to Stanford as a highly rated quarterback coming out of high school, like, stuff like that matters. And teams actually still pay attention to that. And so he has an opportunity to where if he shows out well in the preseason, that, you know, he catches the eye of another team and he winds up landing maybe not a lucrative contract, but, you know, something that can set him up for a long time.
Yeah, the Shanahan tree has grown pretty expansively in terms of teams. And I'll say the Shanahan tree, not the Kubiak Shanahan tree, because Shanahan's offense is it's a lot different than Gary. It's not a lot different, but he's just added so many elements to it that there are a lot of teams around the league that very specifically would look at Davis Mills as, okay, looks like maybe he's taken a step forward and is comfortable with this system, and there's a lot of similarities to our system. And if our quarterback goes down, if a guy gets hurt in training camp or something, or midway through the season, Davis Mills is going to be an option. He's on their board because he can come in and pick up the offense very quickly. So, you know, there's about a third of the league right now is running some version of this type of an offense. So, I think it's very, very possible. And I think when I talk about this, I haven't found a single person that's super receptive to it, but you just got to remember, Bill O'Brien was so hung up on running the Tom Brady system that he thought Brian Hoyer was going to be a better quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick. He thought that Ryan Mallett would be a better option than other guys just because they had been in New England. Coaches care about that a lot. They want a guy that can just plunk in and they don't have to explain everything from square one.
You've seen Mills' first 3 years in this league. You've seen Mills throughout training camp. Have you seen him take a step forward?
Not that I can tell from practice. There's just too many erratic throws on throws that should be simple. There's just too many air mails that I just think when it comes to just looking at, like, okay, wait a second. Is he going to be a 55% completion guy or a 61% completion guy? I think I still lean more towards on the 55% side if push came to shove. And 55 is really, really bad. I shouldn't make it that bad. But like a 60% completion guy versus a 65 or 67% completion guy, he's just still too a little inconsistent.
All right, coming up next on Payne and Pendergast, the Texans might have the most depth that they've had on their roster in a very long time. Does that mean they have guys who are primed to be candidates to be traded to get back some draft capital before the start of the season? We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on Payne and Pendergast, Texans and Bears tonight from Canton. It's the Hall of Fame game. Adam Spillane in for Sean. Sean will be back with Seth on the pregame show. What, at 4 o'clock is when you guys are kicking off?
4 o'clock, yes.
Okay. So you can listen to that right here.
As far as I know, I don't know. I'll just sit here and wait. And, when Sean comes on, I go. Yeah.
So preseason game 1 of 4. Texans are in Pittsburgh next week. And then they have the Rams and Giants to round out the preseason.
And they'll be practicing in Cleveland at Nick Caserio's old high school for a couple days next week. So they don't, I think for a couple reasons. One, so they're not traveling back to Houston and then back up to the Northeast again. But two, a lot of people in the Texans organization, including the players, have the option, I think, of going to some of the Hall of Fame events there in Canton. So it's going to be an interesting week for him.
I do have to ask you, you played with Andre Johnson. How much are you looking forward to seeing that?
I'm really looking forward to the speech of both Gary Kubiak, who's going to be introducing him, and of Andre. Because Andre's really grown as a public speaker. He kind of lets a side of his personality that a lot of people have never seen before come out, and he's a really good storyteller, and he's got that voice, that's kind of like the voice of God in some ways. He's turned into a very powerful public speaker, and I think he'll do a great job. I remember talking to Robert Brazil about this, about prepping for that Hall of Fame speech. They work with those guys. Like they help you refine it. Then you've got all this time to practice it and get it down to the right time and everything. So it's not like they're just going up there and ad-libbing around it or anything. So they work with speechwriters. So I think he'll do a pretty damn good job.
And Andre said his speech has been done for a couple of weeks now. When he finished?
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, but Chancellor Johnson did something with him from Channel 2. He broke down the Courtland Finnegan fight. Did you see this by any chance?
No, I didn't.
We might have to play some of this, I guess, at some point before the show ends, because it was great. And I know he's talked about it a lot over the years, because I feel like it's almost what he's known for. He's this amazing wide receiver who's going to the Hall of Fame, but he might be best known for a fight on the field. So,
well, and it's because he's so quiet typically too, that I think it's just such of a burst of emotion that it's contrary to everything else that you see with Andre Johnson. Like, he's so reserved usually it stands aside as like a unique moment in his career. And Courtland Finnegan has a pretty good sense of humor about it, at least. That helps too. It gets kind of sometimes played up on social media on Andre Johnson's birthday, and Courtland Finnegan goes along with it.
I think we kind of need to get those two together at some point.
That's what, at the Houston Sports Hall of Fame, Gary Kubiak told the story about that, and Gary kind of framed it in the light of, look, Andre waited until the game was already in hand and the Texans were just running out the clock before he decided to take care of business and feel like he just had to. Andre in that moment just felt like he had to establish or prove something to Courtland Finnegan and the Tennessee Titans, and he did it in the right moment of the game. He used restraint and picked his appropriate moment.
So Chancellor asked him, like, what did people say to you in the locker room afterwards? And Andre's response was, nobody really said anything about it because they knew he was an a-hole. I thought that was a great moment. Andre Johnson's, I think he's, what, the first speech on Saturday at the Hall of Fame?
He's the last one.
Okay. That'll be, obviously, it's a great moment for the organization. Looking forward to that on Saturday. Texans, one of the things you brought up, and you said this a few times, the Texans might have more depth on the roster than they've had in a really long time. And it makes for some interesting position battles, and it makes just for some interesting options. And the first thing that came to me are the receivers. Because you go down this receiver room, there are probably, what, 9 receivers that you would consider to be NFL quality? Like quality NFL receivers?
Especially if you factor special teams into it. You know, like Ben Skoranek, who the Texans traded for in the offseason from the Rams, he's showed up as a receiver in camp. He's made some really, really impressive catches at times. I think that's going to end up being the deciding factor for a lot of these guys is that, yeah, look, you're in competition with a lot of other guys that you could probably split it with a hair. But what sets you apart on special teams?
So you look at the receiver room, Diggs, Dell, Collins, Mechie, Noah Brown, Robert Woods, Xavier Hutchinson, Skoranek, who you just mentioned, Stevenson, like that's 9 guys right there. And yeah. last year, the original 53-man roster had 6 receivers. Now you can probably finesse that to get a 7th guy on there, but there's going to be 2, maybe 3 guys who are good enough to play in this league that aren't going to make the team. So that starts to make you think, are there possibilities for you to maybe get a little bit of draft capital by trading 1 or 2 of these guys?
Right. Yeah.
Is that something that you could see them looking to do before the start of the season?
I think there are a couple positions. I think wide receiver is one of them. I think defensive tackle is another. And it's not, you know, none of them are going to go for huge draft capital or anything. It's not going to be a haul. But we know Caserio's one of the, if not the most active GM in the league. And all these 6th and 7th round picks, a lot of times becomes like the spare change that you use to finish off other transactions or to trade for another guy for just like a 6th or 7th round pick. So I'd be surprised if some of these guys aren't dealt for a 6th or 7th round pick towards the end of training camp. So in the wide receivers room, for sure, when you look at defensive tackle, I mean, like Tim Settle, Kurt Heinisch, McTelvin Agim, Khalil Davis, those are guys who aren't starting right now, who I think other teams also probably like. Khalil Davis, I'll be surprised if Khalil Davis doesn't make the team. He's just got a D'Amico Ryans element to him, where he's a strong, physical, big dude that brings an element of toughness that I could see D'Amico not wanting to part with. That might be the kind of guy that where Nick and D'Amico disagree about and have to go back and forth a little bit on. Kurt Heinisch, it's a big year for Kurt Heinisch, though. He's got I think athletically, he doesn't stack up to some of those other guys in the defensive tackle position right now. So I think that other teams might be interested in picking him up, but I don't know if he makes this team. So he's got an opportunity to really potentially show something in these preseason games if he really turns it on when the lights come on to make the squad, but he's really got to show something.
On the receivers, I think that Woods is easily in the top 6. Like, I think Woods is good enough, is certainly good enough to make the team, but do you think the guys that would be behind him are good enough to where, okay, let's say maybe you want to try and get a 6th round pick for Woods. Like, yeah. Do you think the guys that are behind him are good enough to where you could absorb that type of a loss just to get that pick?
I think a lot of that, it really depends on what they really feel about John Mechie right now. Because Mechie looks so much faster. It's like his routes look that much better. Like he's just getting in and out of breaks really quickly. But he has had a lot of drops in camp. And I just wonder exactly if they look at him as a guy that they can rely on right now, or if he's a guy that's more for the future. So some of that might factor into it. Xavier Hutchinson might be a little bit in that same boat of just like, okay, how much can we rely on him right now? Because Woods is the guy amongst all those backups. Woods and Noah Brown are the two guys that you look at and you can say, okay, I can depend on this guy. I know what he can do for us in this system. And if somebody goes down, I can plug them in and we can execute the same game plan. I mean, they'll have to tweak the game plan, but I think a lot of it really does come down to how much they really now trust John Metchie or Xavier Hutchinson.
And the two guys that you just mentioned with Woods and Noah Brown, those are the vets. Like, those are the guys where, like, let's say they want to try and clear out a little bit of cap space for maybe bring in a veteran defensive end who they've talked about maybe bringing back to the team at some point. Like, if you need to clear cap space, like, you can trade one of those two guys, and it works because the young guys behind them might be ready to fill in those roles. And I think that's why these preseason games are important, because you get a little bit more information on guys like Metchie, on guys like Hutchinson.
You know, the guy that partly because of the catches he's made, but partly just because of his name, is Quintez Cephas. Quintez Cephas has made some pretty spectacular grabs. I couldn't tell you down in and down out exactly how good he's been in camp. He's running with the backups all the time. But he's the guy the Texans brought in who had missed time because of a gambling violation. He might end up being one of these guys. Who was the guy back in the day?
Sounds like Sean's favorite player.
What's that? They sent him to a state where there's no legal sports gambling without a VPN. So I think that Quintez Cephas might be that guy. Like, remember Lestar Jean?
Yes.
Back in the day, Lestar Jean would be like a camp hero. People called him Camp Star Jean, but then he would kind of fade into the shadows. I'm wondering if Quintez Cephas might make some spectacular plays in training camp, and then end up becoming a fan favorite in these preseason games, and then get cut at the end. Or he might make the squad. I don't know.
You know, I went through those nine receivers. I did not mention Cephas. I did not mention Ben Skoranek. Like, it is an absurdly deep wide receiver room right now.
It's and Steven Sims as well, because Steven Sims has been getting a lot of the reps as a returner. And, you know, we know that he's very capable and has potential there. That's where the special teams is really going to come into it. I think that Frank Ross might be the guy who's most upset when the final cut day comes, because he's got a lot of promising young special teams players on the team that he'd probably want to keep them all, but obviously you just have position crunches on it.
One other area that we haven't mentioned is at tight end. And obviously you have Dalton Schultz, and they drafted Cade Stover in the fourth round, and you have Teagan Quatoriano still hanging around. Is there a possibility that if Brevin Jordan could be one of these guys who maybe gets lost in the shuffle a little bit, and that's a guy that you try and move on from because you think that other guys are ready?
I'm going to be surprised if that happens, just because D'Amico has been so bullish on him and brings his name up unprompted at times as a guy that they're always pointing to Brevin in meetings that, hey, look at what Brevin did today. I think that if you look at the composition of the tight ends right now, the biggest concern is that none of them are good blockers. Cade Stover might develop into a good blocker, but we don't know. He's only played the position for 2 years in college, you know, after transitioning from linebacker to tight end. I think some of it will come down to, okay, do they trust just having three tight ends, none of whom right this moment are good blockers, and one of them's Brevin Jordan? Are we burning a tight end spot on a guy that's not a great blocker? I think that ultimately they're going to worry less about that and think more about the receiving threat of Brevin Jordan. And he's a very viable, like, gadget play type of, line him up as an H-back, split him out wide, use him to take advantage of opportunities game plan by game plan. So I don't think Brevin Jordan gets traded away at any point. I think that might be another, you know, kind of Bobby Slowick versus Nick Caserio argument or disagreement. And when I say this, like, this coaching staff seems like that they're that healthy kind of coaching staff that can have productive disagreements. You know, that they can disagree about things and take their time with it. And, you know, Caserio at the end of the day has to make the hard decision.
And Frank Ross has mentioned Jordan is a guy who's made some plays on special teams also, and so
yeah,
you know, that might factor into things as well.
You know, the guy that's probably the most intriguing that I just don't know what to make of right now is Cam Akers. And a lot of people got excited when the Texans got Cam Akers because of the name, I think. And you remember in 2021, he came in as a rookie for the Rams and did some really electrifying stuff, but then tore his Achilles tendon early in 2022, came back and played on their Super Bowl run, didn't play particularly well, and then ended up being, it was 2020 was his rookie year. 2021 was when he got injured, excuse me. And then in 2022, a lot of people were really bullish. Like, fantasy people were projecting him as a sleeper hit and all this. And the Rams tried to trade him in 2022, couldn't do it, ended up successfully trading him in 2023. And he looked a little bit better with Minnesota, but it wasn't anything that looked like the promise of his rookie year. Then he tore his Achilles again last year. So he's coming off of two Achilles tendon tears in his career. Running backs rarely do well even after one Achilles tendon tear. Deontay Foreman's really the only guy in the NFL who's ever done it, or at least this century. I went back and looked at all the running backs who've had Achilles tendon tears. Deontay Foreman is the only one in the last 20 years that's looked as good or better after his Achilles tendon tear. But then I watch him at practice, and man, he looks pretty quick. I don't know what to make of him. I don't think that he'd be somebody they'd be able to trade, even if he had a promising preseason performance. But I think he is a guy that you want to keep an eye on and see if he still has some of that old burst, and his ability as a receiver might make a big difference. Some of his best plays in Minnesota last year were as a receiver. So he's just a huge wild card right now. The name appeal is a lot greater than, like, realistically what you should expect, except I'm still falling for the name appeal a little bit.
That'll be somebody that I think we'll see on the field tonight in Canton as the Texans take on the Bears in the Hall of Fame game. Coming up next on Peyton Pendergast, C.J. Stroud came up on the NFL Players Top 100 list. We'll let you know where he landed, and then we'll discuss, are players good at actually ranking themselves? That's next on Sports Radio 610. Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Texans and Bears tonight from Canton in the Hall of Fame game. C.J. Stroud is unlikely to play. It hasn't been made official or anything like that, but I think we would all be shocked if C.J. Stroud plays in tonight's game. But C.J. Stroud is part of the NFL Players Top 100 list. And last night they announced spots 11 through 20. C.J. Stroud was on there. He was not ranked last year. And Seth, I have to ask you, would you have C.J. Stroud ranked as the 20th best player in the NFL right now?
It's tough because I think, okay, are we looking at it as a projection of what he can be this year, or based on his performance last year for the sum total of 2023? If I were basing it just on last year, like from week one through the playoffs, I wouldn't say he's a top 20 player. But I think that the fact of the matter is that he was so advanced in some of the finer aspects of quarterback play, really the stuff from the neck up, that it's hard. And, you know, we've seen this from just about every former NFL quarterback who still actively analyzes tape. When you hear it from defensive backs and linebackers in the NFL right now, it's hard not to be bullish about his future in this year, because the mental side of stuff is where so many rookie phenoms falter. And, like, usually what you're trying to do is you're hoping that by year three, your quarterback is operating mentally at an advanced level. And there's, you know, these days, a lot of these quarterbacks that are getting their extensions after the third year, their teams are still trying to figure out if they're going to play like genuine pro quarterbacks. I think I would put Josh Allen in that boat, and he's past that point. I would certainly put Trevor Lawrence at that point. And that's where it's hard to figure. I think a lot of people look at the way C.J. Stroud operated mentally in terms of processing and reading coverages, everything else like that, and that's why they have him as high as they do. So I would project that he's going to be a top 10 by the end of the year. And regardless of whether the Texans have a great season or just a mediocre season, if those receivers stay healthy, he's going to show an advanced version of what we saw last year, which was already a pretty advanced version.
So C.J. Stroud ranked 20th. Roquan Smith is 19th. Justin Jefferson is 18th. He was second last year. Micah Parsons, 17th. Dak Prescott is 16th. Jalen Hurts, 15th. George Kittle, 14th. CeeDee Lamb, 13th. Josh Allen is 12th. That's a little low to me. And then 11th is Fred Warner. Anything?
Fred Warner, 11th.
There?
That's I like whenever I hear Fred Warner's name mentioned, because it reminds me that D'Amico was his linebackers coach as a rookie, and then his defensive coordinator. Like, Fred Warner rose to greatness alongside D'Amico Ryans, like, as D'Amico is becoming a hotter and hotter name in the coaching searches. The Dak Prescott one is interesting, because I think Dak's one that I don't know where he's been previously, but is that you got this curious conundrum of Dak Prescott putting in MVP caliber seasons at times, and yet last year, are they crediting Mike McCarthy with a big bunch of that? Is it that Mike McCarthy taking over the play calling, and the fact that Dak had the season and the regular season that he did? Are the players not as high on Dak Prescott perhaps as the performance on the field?
So he was 40th last year.
40th. Okay, so they gave him credit for putting in the season that he did.
Second in MVP voting. They were what? They were 12-5 in the regular season before they flamed out in the playoffs. That to me is fine. I'm surprised Josh Allen isn't in the top 10. And he was fourth last year.
I think Josh Allen. Yeah.
He went down and he was really good last year. I know they didn't like have huge passing numbers, but they won the division. They were second in the AFC, and he still goes down 8 spots.
I think they're okay. I mean, first you always have to remember that it's 100 players and it's a little bit of a popularity contest. I think with the quarterbacks, you can almost look at the narratives of it all. So okay, Dak Prescott goes up, and he had second in the MVP voting, had a really good year. It probably would have been a lot higher if the Cowboys had actually done something in the playoffs for the first time in their lives. I'll say in their lives, because most Cowboys fans now, I would say the median, if it's like 30 years old or so, that they've never experienced a Super Bowl with the Dallas Cowboys. So, but with Josh Allen, I think almost the fact that Stephon Diggs had his issues that he did with Josh Allen, and that it's been year after year of the Bills being, hey, they're the next one, they're knocking on the door, is this going to be the year they kick that door in? And the fact that they haven't, I think Josh gets a little flack from that.
And the players chose the side of Diggs, you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think there might be. I think there might be a little bit of that. I wonder if players look at, I could see why Diggs was getting frustrated. I understand it. I get it.
Are players good at ranking themselves?
No.
So we should take this with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, no, because it is. It's just you don't get to watch film on everybody every year. You're not actually dissecting them or seeing them all that often. So you see them in primetime games. So I think the players, and I include this in picking the Pro Bowl, they've got a more informed opinion than a lot of the fans and everything. But they're also subject to, because you're not, you're watching, when you're watching film during the week, you're watching your upcoming opponent. And so the guys that you see, so this is the way it works for Pro Bowl voting. The defensive players vote for the offensive guys and vice versa. So you're basing a lot of it on the guys that you don't watch on film. You're basing it on primetime games, and you're basing it on just, social media stuff and everything. Whether they admit it or not, that's all seeping into your subconscious. So I think there's probably still too much of that for this list. And then there's also personal alliances and everything. I feel like 100 is not a big enough sample size to balance that all out.
When you would see the Pro Bowl list come out at the end of the season, were you ever like, wait, this guy, really? He's a Pro Bowler?
For offensive linemen, I would be. Yeah, like offensive linemen, there's definitely, for one, if there's not a lot of hype about a guy, usually they get in 2 or 3 years after they should. And then once they get in, they keep getting rubber stamped in, almost like is like a lazy man's just, and I'm biased there, I guess, because I would go against some of those offensive linemen and I'd be like, oh, this guy's like this. I had a way tougher time with this other guy that wasn't even in the mentions versus this guy that's a Pro Bowl every year.
If Mahomes isn't number one, is the list null and void? Do we have to just, like, burn it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Is yeah.
There's no other, like, acceptable possibility for number one, you don't think?
Yeah, I don't think so. Is Jalen Hurts? Where's Jalen Hurts on this?
He's in that 11 through 20.
He's in the 11 through 20, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I mean, except nobody, people are going to keep consuming it. People love lists, man.
They
know
do.
This.
They really
you write
do.
Web content. They just love lists.
They do.
And they love arguing about it. Even if, you could present somebody a list saying, hey, this was randomly generated. We had an actual monkey pick ping pong balls out of a vat. And this is our list of top 10 players. And there's a part of the human brain that will look at that list and be like, well, but it is a list. So, it is a power ranking. So yeah, I'm kind of angry about this randomly generated list. Yeah.
I could draw names from a hat, say that I drew names from a hat, and people would still be upset at the order that I drew the names in.
Yes, they would. Yes, yes. And then this is the key. Kids, listen, if you ever want to dupe somebody, If you ever want to just major in the art of rhetoric, yeah, just make a list and people will look at it. Even as they're exclaiming that it's invalid and doesn't make any sense, there's a part of their brain that still thinks like, yeah, but it is a list. I don't know. There's just it's a fault in our human brain that is as soon as you put a number to something or make it a list or something, even if you don't believe in it, there's a part of you that still like gives it some legitimacy.
A reminder: Texans Bears tonight from Canton in the Hall of Fame game. Kickoff is at 7. Pregame with Seth and Sean will start at 4. Coming up next, the Astros beat the Pirates last night 5-4 to end their 3-game losing skid. They are back in first place in the American League West. Yusei Kikuchi, their big acquisition at the trade deadline, arrived in Houston before the game. He will start on Friday. Are we feeling any better about that trade 48 hours later? We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio 610. Adam Spillane in for Sean. Seth is here. Texans and Bears tonight from Canton in the Hall of Fame game. CJ Stroud is unlikely to play. It hasn't been made official or anything like that, but I think we would all be shocked if CJ Stroud plays in tonight's game. But CJ Stroud is part of the NFL players' top 100 list. And last night they announced spots 11 through 20. CJ Stroud was on there. He was not ranked last year. And Seth, I have to ask you, would you have C.J. Stroud ranked as the 20th best player in the NFL right now?
It's tough because I think, okay, are we looking at it as a projection of what he can be this year or based on his performance last year for the sum total of 2023? If I were basing it just on last year, like from week one through the playoffs, I wouldn't say he's a top 20 player. But I think that the fact of the matter is that he was so advanced in some of the finer aspects of quarterback play, really the stuff from the neck up, that it's hard. And, you know, we've seen this from just about every former NFL quarterback who still actively analyzes tape. When you hear it from defensive backs and linebackers in the NFL right now, it's hard not to be bullish about his future in this year. Because the mental side of stuff is where so many rookie phenoms falter. And like usually what you're trying to do is you're hoping that by year three, your quarterback is operating mentally at an advanced level. And there's, you know, these days, a lot of these quarterbacks that are getting their extensions after the third year, their teams are still trying to figure out if they're going to play like genuine pro quarterbacks. I think I would put Josh Allen in that boat, and he's past that point. I would certainly put Trevor Lawrence at that point. And that's where it's hard to figure. I think a lot of people look at the way CJ Stroud operated mentally in terms of processing and reading coverages, everything else like that. And that's why they have him as high as they do. So I would project that he's going to be a top 10 by the end of the year. And regardless of whether the Texans have a great season or just a mediocre season, if those receivers stay healthy, he's going to show an advanced version of what we saw last year, which was already a pretty advanced version.
So CJ Stroud ranked 20th. Roquan Smith is 19th. Justin Jefferson is 18th. He was second last year. Micah Parsons, 17th. Dak Prescott is 16th, Jalen Hurts 15th, George Kittle 14th, CeeDee Lamb 13th, Josh Allen is 12th. That's a little low to me. And then 11th is Fred Warner. Anything?
Fred Warner 11th. That's I like whenever I hear Fred Warner's name mentioned because it reminds me that D'Amico was his linebackers coach as a rookie and then his defensive coordinator. Like Fred Warner rose to greatness alongside D'Amico Ryans. Like as D'Amico is becoming a hotter and hotter name in the coaching searches. The Dak Prescott one is interesting because I think Dak's one that I don't know where he's been previously, but is that you got this curious conundrum of Dak Prescott putting in MVP caliber seasons at times, and yet last year, are they crediting Mike McCarthy with a big bunch of that? Is it Mike McCarthy taking over the play calling and the fact that Dak had the season and the regular season that he did? Are the players not as high on Dak Prescott perhaps as the performance on the field?
So he was 40th last year.
40th. Okay, so they gave him credit for putting in the season that he did.
Second in MVP voting. They were 12-5 in the regular season before they flamed out in the playoffs. That to me is fine. I'm surprised Josh Allen isn't in the top 10. And he was fourth last year.
I think Josh Allen,
He went down and he was really good last year. I know they didn't like have huge passing numbers, but they won the division. They were second in the AFC and he still goes down 8 spots.
I think they're okay. I mean, first, you always have to remember it's 100 players and it's a little bit of a popularity contest. I think with the quarterbacks, you can almost look at the narratives of it all. So, okay, Dak Prescott goes up and he had second in the MVP voting, had a really good year. It probably would have been a lot higher if the Cowboys had actually done something in the playoffs for the first time in their lives. I'll say in their lives because most Cowboys fans now, I would say the median, if it's like 30 years old or so, that they've never experienced the Super Bowl with the Dallas Cowboys. So, but with Josh Allen, I think almost the fact that Stephon Diggs had his issues that he did with Josh Allen, and that it's been year after year of the Bills being, hey, they're the next one, they're knocking on the door. Is this going to be the year they kick that door in? And the fact that they haven't, I think Josh gets a little flack from that.
And the players chose the side of Diggs, you think?
I think so. Yeah, I think there might be. I think there might be a little bit of that. I wonder if players look at, I could see why Diggs was getting frustrated. I understand it. I get it.
Are players good at ranking themselves?
No.
So we should take this with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, no, because it is. It's just you don't get to watch film on everybody every year. You're not actually dissecting them or seeing them all that often. So you see them in primetime games. So I think the players, and I include this in picking the Pro Bowl, they've got a more informed opinion than a lot of the fans and everything. But they're also subject to, you know, because you're not, you know, you're watching, when you're watching film during the week, you're watching your upcoming opponent. And so the guys that you see, so this is the way it works for Pro Bowl voting. The defensive players vote for the offensive guys and vice versa. So you're basing a lot of it on the guys that you don't watch on film. You're basing it on primetime games and you're basing it on just, you know, social media stuff and everything, whether they admit it or not, that's all seeping into your subconscious. So I think there's still too much of that for this list. And then there's also personal alliances and everything. I feel like 100's not a big enough sample size to balance that all out.
When you would see the Pro Bowl list come out at the end of the season, were you ever like, wait, this guy, really? He's a Pro Bowler?
For offensive linemen, I would be. Yeah, like offensive linemen, there's definitely, for one, if there's not a lot of hype about a guy, usually they get in 2 or 3 years after they should. And then once they get in, they keep getting rubber stamped in almost like is like a lazy man's just, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. I guess. Yeah. And I'm biased there, I guess, because I would go against some of those offensive linemen and I'd be like, well, I had a way tougher time with this other guy that wasn't even in the mentions versus this guy that's a Pro Bowl every year.
If Mahomes isn't number one, is the list null and void? Do we have to just like burn it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Is there
there's no other like acceptable possibility for number one, you don't think?
I don't think so. Is Jalen Hurts? Where's Jalen Hurts on this?
He's in that. He's in that 11 through 20.
He's in the 11 through 20. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Okay. I mean, except nobody. People are going to keep consuming it. People love lists, man.
They
know
do.
This.
They really
you write
do.
Web content. They just love lists.
They do,
and they love arguing about it. Even if, you could present somebody a list saying, "Hey, this was randomly generated. We had an actual monkey pick ping pong balls out of a vat." And this is our list of top 10 players. And there's a part of the human brain that will look at that list and be like, well, but it is a list. So, it is a power ranking. So yeah, I'm kind of angry about this randomly generated list. Yeah.
I could draw names from a hat, say that I drew names from a hat, and people would still be upset at the order that I drew the names in.
Yes, they would. Yes, yes. And then this is the key. Kids, listen, if you ever want to dupe somebody, If you ever want to just major in the art of rhetoric, yeah, just make a list and people will look at it. Even as they're exclaiming that it's invalid and doesn't make any sense, there's a part of their brain that still thinks like, yeah, but it is a list. I don't know. There's just it's a fault in our human brain that is as soon as you put a number to something or make it a list or something, even if you don't believe in it, there's a part of you that still like gives it some legitimacy.
A reminder: Texans Bears tonight from Canton in the Hall of Fame game. Kickoff is at 7. Pregame with Seth and Sean will start at 4. Coming up next, the Astros beat the Pirates last night 5-4 to end their 3-game losing skid. They are back in first place in the American League West. Yusei Kikuchi, their big acquisition at the trade deadline, arrived in Houston before the game. He will start on Friday. Are we feeling any better about that trade 48 hours later? We'll talk about that next on Sports Radio 610.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.